Elsa.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD.
Hey, Bo.
My voice is like, I've been struggling.
Yeah, it's like, you're doing good, though. You're emphasizing things when you need to and reserving when you can.
It's rough, man. It's rough. I'm trying to, it's actually probably for the benefit of the listener that I'm trying to like hold back on these final episodes.
Tone it in.
Yeah, just reel it in. Reel it in. I was telling you, it's frustrating because I can't go up the octave that I want to go up. I'm like stuck in the baritone, which is cool because I remember in the early days of Country Squire Radio when we would pre-record like...
Oh, that's funny.
Like pre-rolls and such.
Right.
I would always... this podcast is brought to you by the Country Squire for their unparalleled customer service.
Right.
You
know, yeah.
I would always wait till after I was sick so that my voice was like down at that like bass octave. But it's rough because I've always been able to go, you know, tenor and bass. So I've always been bisectional. And at the moment, but it's difficult. You don't even know because
you're
never
bisectional anymore.
You've never been bisectional. It is difficult to not be bisectional in 2023. And so like as I find myself right now stuck with this baritone and like I want to be able, like, for, you know, I mean, spoilers ahead, but we're going to have quick fire questions this episode, and I won't be able to say quick fire questions. You know, like, it's going to cut me off. Yeah. I can't even do that. You're more bisexual than I am. Hey, man, we've got an awesome episode to talk about this week. I'm really excited to be jumping into it. Hey, we are in the final episodes, the final weeks here of Country Squire Radio, but we are building up to a big event coming your
way. That is right.
So March 4th at the Country Squire in Jackson, Mississippi, we will be doing our episode 500 live from the Country Squire. It's going to have barbecue and pipe tobacco pairing. We're going to have live music. It's going to be fun. We've already kind of been thinking about some of the behind the scenes stories, things that we've never shared on air before that we're going to be sharing there.
Yeah.
Some of which may be cut before you can hear it on the podcast. So you're going to want to be there. You're absolutely going to want to be there for this event. It is a pipe pilgrimage like none other. Help us celebrate 10 years of Country Squire Radio as we all bring this show to a close in epic proportions together.
Yes.
Head over to thecountrysquireonline.com. There's a banner there where you'll be able to see all the details. There's also one available at countrysquireradio.com. Get your tickets. Come join us. We would love to have you there.
Gosh, I'm so, you know, we're in the home stretch here.
And that's right.
It is really exciting, man. I mean, I have so many great memories about the past 10 years and just as we get to relive them and all the things we're thankful for, man, we get to enjoy it with you guys.
And tell you what, it's episode 500 and if 500 of y'all show up, we'll do, no, I'm just kidding.
No,
we'll do 500 more.
Don't you promise that. Don't you promise that.
No, that's not true. It's not true. It's not true.
Oh my goodness.
Suddenly all of a sudden like, boom, the ticket sales.
I know. Man, I'm really looking forward to it. Please go and purchase your tickets, though.
Yes,
and that's going to cover your food and any other of the little, it'll help cover the music
prizes.
And all that stuff, too.
Yeah.
And also, it'll help us plan for, you know, obviously how many people are going to be there.
That's
and
right.
We're going to, our little shop's going to have to, going to have to get creative about space management that day.
We'll see. Anyway. I mean, you know, some people are just going to want to come and throw tomatoes at us and that sort of thing.
That
is fair. They might leave right after. You know,
yeah, no, that's right. That's right. It'd probably be worth a drive to do that.
So. It's going
to
be really fun, man. I think it'll be great. Hey, this week we're doing the final from the library. Now, I think it's worth doing a little exploration or a little bit of history here. So from the library, one of our newer series that we introduced last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
The concept here is we were thinking through, you know, where we wanted to take the show was we wanted to showcase conversations that you might have in the space of a mom and pop pipe tobacco shop, the kind of conversations that happen in the Country Squire that have happened in the Country Squire, you know, be able to pack your pipe, listen to an episode like this and join in with some contemplative conversation. I will remember of the various ones that we kind of kicked around, you know, the most self-serving, of course, being the Finer Things series.
I know. Hey, that Straight Razor Shave episode was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. That was a good way to start.
Not Straight Razor Shave because it wasn't. It was a hot towel shave.
It was supposed to be,
but then we got schooled on that and it turned into a hot towel shave.
Exactly. that was an interesting
and
situation.
And then we had the Straight Razor fans write in and were like, you didn't give the Straight Razor the time of day.
That was
like,
crazy.
Well, hey, we were just there. We were just had the microphone. You know?
That's right. You gotta go where the story is. But anyway, so that being one of them, Father to Father being a very popular, if not polarizing one.
Yeah.
And then we've got From the Library. This was a concept that you came up with.
Yeah.
That it's a very rare thing in Country Squire Radio, in the history of Country Squire Radio, for you to come up with a concept that I don't feel comfortable with. Yeah. Typically, it goes the other way around. I come up with a concept, you're like, nah, I don't know about that.
Normally, all the concepts you come up with, I'm like, nah, we're not going to do that.
Starting with the idea of this podcast.
Of the podcast itself. 10 years later.
But yeah, no, this was something that, you know, you are a well-read individual. You're somebody who has a lot of passion for writings of theology, philosophy, poetry, history. You know, I think you are a celebrated old soul in all the best possible ways. And, you know, the concept of this from the library, not only does it bring in the conversations that you'd have over a bowl of pipe tobacco in a pipe shop, but it takes it a little bit, in my mind, a step further and goes to, if you think back to our pipe culture series on pipe spaces, the study or the library was kind of one of these kind of historied cultural, you know, spaces where folks would enjoy their pipe. And so there's a lot of mergings together with this series. And I think it's one of the reasons I do like to kind of like remind people of that is because, you know, we're going to be reading some passages and talking about it. And if there's a kind of a question of like, what does this have to do with pipe tobacco? Well, pack your pipe and enjoy it while we're having this conversation.
That's right.
I think you'll find yourself transported into the exact type of place where you can enjoy your pipe with conversations just like this one.
You know, as we pivoted, and it was a pivot, you know, over the past year with our content, Bo and I have, we felt like it needed, you know, the kind of, not the tenor of the show, but maybe the content of the show.
I can't do tenor right now. I told you, I'm not bisexual anymore.
I know. Okay. I'll pick up for where you, never mind. Anyway. So, you know, we thought like, okay, this was an opportunity to still talk about the pipe, but then draw in some content that, you know, again, like Bo mentioned, was what are some of the experiences and feelings you might get at the at the mom and pop pipe shop, certainly at the Country Squire, and you know, and this resonated with some people, and with others it didn't, and that's okay. That's okay.
And they've still rocked with it. It's been great to actually see they'll cherry pick a little bit, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
but I think this is a series that has been kind of for our nourishment, our kind of soul.
That's
and
exactly
mind nourishment.
Right. Yeah. And so for those that have kind of begrudgingly loved us through this, we thank you for your patience.
Absolutely.
We do. Today, we're going to read an article that is a short article. It's from Psychology Today, and it is entitled 6 Steps to Leading a Life of Integrity.
Man, I love Psychology Today. They've got some very thought-provoking articles from time to time.
You know, they can. I mean, honestly, it's a mixed bag.
Absolutely.
You know, it's one of those things.
Every
website's a mixed bag. Every public, you know, all these online magazines and stuff nowadays. You know, speaking of magazine, I used to read constantly the National Geographic and the Scientific American and some of these. And
now, John David, what's a magazine?
And well, it's a physical thing.
What's a physical?
It's a
what's a thing?
I'm just kidding. Go ahead. It's a thing you cut the letters out of to make the ransom note.
Oh, okay. I got
you. But you know that a lot of these magazines have become such mixed bags on their content that like I just don't enjoy them anymore. You know, and so like Psychology Today, sometimes I enjoy some of their content, and a lot of times I don't. And the same thing with these other publications. So, but I like this article, and the concept of integrity is very important to me. And so we'll read this kind of brief article and unpack it a little bit. Hopefully, you'll find some gems, and maybe we'll share a little bit about our own experience as well. 6 Steps to Leading a Life of Integrity by Bob Tabby, and it's T-A-I-B-B-I. He's a licensed clinical social worker. So having integrity is a matter of bringing the inner you into the outer world. Let's see. Hold on. Let me say that again. Having integrity is a matter of bringing the inner you into the outer world.
Being true to yourself.
Being true to self.
Right. Okay. I'm tracking with you.
Which is interesting. So, Bo, would you like to read the first part or would you like me to? I'll take it.
If you don't mind. I'm pounding this tea here, so I'll be able to.
No, that's great. That's great. Tabby starts. He says, much like Justice Stewart's favorite comment about pornography, quote, "I may not be able to define it, but I know it when I see it." Integrity, too, is something that we may not easily be able to put into words, but we do recognize. People either have it or they don't. It seems like we generally associate the word with those who seem to have strong moral compass, clear and consistent principles, and a bold honesty about themselves. It's part of their character. But integrity is actually more complex. There's another layer that often gets misunderstood or glossed over. The word is derived from the Latin word integritas, which means whole or complete. It is related to the word integrate or bringing together. This is the aspect I'm most intrigued by. Integrity as a psychological process, an integration of your outer life and your inner life, the two sides coming together, creating a whole, consistent you. In our society, such integration can be hard to come by. Many of us, I believe, are disconnected from our true inner core, while others of us rarely reveal it. Instead, we slap on a social persona to carry us through our day, and over time, this becomes more and more who we begin to believe we are.
Ooh.
Can we create this integration, this, quote, integrity, and develop it? Can we reshape our lives to become like those people we admire and respect who seem authentic and honest? I believe we can. I'll stop here for a minute.
Interesting.
So he is... He's kind of messing with the word integrity here a little bit, and I want to define the word integrity. You know, when I initially thought of integrity, I would think of, oh, that's someone that's honest, right? It just is very
honesty
simple.
Honesty is the first word that kind of comes to mind.
Integrity is just, oh, that's another word for honest, right? Integrity is just honesty, right? But he's kind of messing with that a little bit. He's not messing with it. He's pulling some onion layers back, I think, and saying, how do we extrapolate that? So
it's kind of like, what happens when honesty is challenged,
right,
or put on trial?
Right.
I mean, if I'm understanding correctly,
yeah,
it's about two things. One is the honesty of knowing yourself in a sense of knowing what you believe, what you stand for.
Right.
And who are you, you know, or, well, not even like, I guess in this first point, not as much when that's challenged, but are you willing to be that person?
Right.
Who you actually are? And do you know yourself enough to be that person?
That's a great way to put that. That's a great way to put that. So you've kind of learned who that is. But then you countenance that to the world, right?
Right.
So it's consistent, right?
It's the Oracle in the first Matrix, you know, or we could just say the good one.
The good one.
The good Matrix. No, I mean, now the other ones had their little gems here and there, but like,
right,
the one that's like consistently good throughout.
Right.
When Neo's meeting the Oracle and, you know, she's in the kitchen, she's making the cookies and whatnot.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know what that says, you know, above there, it's Latin. It means know thyself.
Yeah.
And that's really what that whole, you know, movie is really about, is like knowing who you truly are.
So Merriam-Webster defines integrity in three ways. The first definition, which of course is the most common, it's number one, a firm adherence to a code of especially moral or artistic values,
okay,
also known as incorruptibility. Okay, so we think about, like, this is, you know, that goes towards that honesty. Like, this is someone that really follows the rules, right? It's someone that has a code of ethics or conduct, and they are committed to that, and, you know, that kind of thing. Number two, integrity defined as an unimpaired condition or soundness, okay? Think of a bridge. And someone says that bridge has integrity. What they're saying is, like, it is sound. Like, you, like, that is a safe bridge to drive on. Like, it has, you know,
ain't gonna drop you.
The physical inside and out are consistent. They are well made. Like that physical structure has integrity, right?
Yes.
So that's you're kind of looking at it a little different way. A third way, the quality or state of being complete or undivided. Completeness.
Could you use that version in a sentence, please?
Well, I mean, we think about, like, you know, that person lives with integrity because their inside matches their outside.
Okay. So a little bit more of like a metaphorical or a metaphysical.
It's
integrity.
In my mind, it's more of a consistency.
Okay.
You know, it's like it's a honesty from your fabric.
It's not just that they did that action that took integrity. It's that they live their life in a way that communicates, this is a person with integrity.
Right.
Okay.
I think.
All right.
But I like what he's doing here. You know, he says that integrity is more complex. He talks about it being a kind of associated with a code of conduct or something. But then he talks about the layer that gets misunderstood or glossed over. It comes from this word integritas, which means to integrate. It's something that the outside is consistent with the inside. And, you know, the reason why I wanted to talk about this as our last from the library is because in 2013, my life started to change. And it was because of Country Squire Radio. No, I mean, it did. But it was really because I was introduced to the concept of integrity for the first time. I remember that year going through a whole lot of counseling. And I'd been through counseling at that point almost my entire life, dealing with a lot of codependency and self-loathing and all kinds of weird stuff. But this concept of integrity was new to me. Because for me, before then, counseling was almost like just an enabler kind of thing. Like, I would go to counseling just to say I could check a box and then say, oh, well, I'm trying to do something.
At least I'm trying to do something.
Yeah.
Sure.
And it was all a lie, you know, in a lot of ways. But I met with this therapist, and he was the first one to ever challenge me. And he challenged me with this concept of integrity, finding out internally who you are and then letting it be consistent with what you're portraying, number one, to the world, but especially number two, to your closest friends.
So this is interesting because we met around that time.
Exactly.
And you were very much going through this transition. Right. I remember, like, your house in particular was like a hub. Like, right. You would throw like these crazy parties and everything else. I remember feeling like I kind of missed the boat on the John David crazy parties.
The crazy parties were pre-integrity. Right. Well, there were some post-integrity.
No, there were some post-integrity parties.
But you know, you think about, like, you know, I needed people to love me.
Right. Right, right, right.
I needed people that I didn't even like to love me.
Right, to validate you.
To validate me. And my internal world was so fractured. And this concept of integrity was so, it was so important to me, kind of starting to understand, like, that's not what you need necessarily. What you need is a fundamental consistency between what's inside your heart and what your friends experience, you know, letting people in. So anyway, we'll continue on now.
Yeah.
He goes on, discover your inner life. If integrity is about having your outer world truly reflect your inner world, the first step to taking the time and thought to drill down and explore and discover who you are, what is your unique inner being? What are the gifts that you alone possess that you can contribute to the world and those around you? There are several steps to this discovery. Number one, find and define your sense of purpose. I vividly remember a lecture by a Buddhist monk who said that while most people associate Buddhism with a deeply contemplative, meditative life, the reality couldn't be more different. Because Buddhists believe in reincarnation, the monk said, being a human being is the greatest opportunity you can have. Other forms of life don't have what you have, namely the ability to control their lives or make choices or set their destiny. Only humans do. Being human, says the monk, is a gift, one that we need to appreciate and grasp. Take advantage of the time and opportunity in the life cycle and act boldly. He was talking about action, but also implying a purpose here. With the unique ability to choose and control, what do you truly want to do with the opportunity and time that you have? While some of us know our callings and passions early on, for those of us that discovery only comes through a process of exploration, of traveling down the road only to back up and take another. That's fine. What doesn't work out is sitting on a couch and expecting to somehow just figure it all out. Hmm. But even the couch sitting isn't where many of us can get stuck. The bigger problem is that we never take the time or have the courage to ask such questions at all. Instead, we prematurely settle. We set our expectations of ourselves and life too low. We push such issues in the back burner of our lives, and we get so busy running our lives that we don't live our lives. So the starting point to creating a life of integrity is to ask these questions about purpose and opportunity, and to keep them always simmering on the front burner. Be willing to acknowledge and then explore your passions and callings and motivations. and internally sort through and set priorities. Sit down with yourself and decide on the meaning of the work and the relationships for you rather than simply take what you get. Sorting out the shoulds and wants. I love this. He goes on to talk about sorting out the difference between should and want. Asking these big questions sets the discovery process in motion, but now other psychological and emotional challenges may rear their heads. You can get confused or befuddled or overwhelmed by the choices. You have trouble identifying what it is that you truly feel. Guilt or self-criticism can rise up as you struggle to sort out the contradictory rules and expectations from your parents and society. You are too inside of your head. Instead of your gut, you consider your heart. This is where the passion and the sense of purpose really come from, your wants and desires and bursts of excitement, rather than the shoulds that wag their fingers and scold. Mm-hmm. As I've said in other posts, this move from shoulds to wants is a matter of literally rewiring your brain and changing where the information about you comes from. It requires that you keep your ear close to your heart and, as the monk said, take action. Each time you do listen and act upon these gut and heart impulses, however faint, the source of information about you becomes ever stronger in your brain and life. But this, once again, requires courage, the essential ingredient of integrity, to step away from the crowd and to listen to your own inner voice. We'll stop there. So he said a lot, but again, it's exploring that both intentionally. I always struggle with this because, okay, I'm ready to explore. Let me go to my coffee shop and get my journal and, you know, my little latte and like, okay, I'm ready. Let's explore. Like, let's go explore, you know, but it's not, it doesn't ever really happen that way, right? Like it to me, it's maybe for some people it does but for me, you know, exploring your true desires, those deepest yearnings, those vivid things in your heart that make you sing and what really identifies your fabric. It doesn't really come to me from an exercise. It comes more from just learning to go through life and recognizing the emotions that pop up and then paying attention to them.
Yeah, that's really good. There was, you know, it makes me think about a time within the last year or so where I was going through something that was kind of an emotional maelstrom as I was trying to process, like, even how I felt about it all.
Yeah.
One of the things that I did during that time was I would literally just sit down, and I don't do this, but I journaled. And I don't mean journal in the sense of like, dear diary, today I, you know, nothing like that.
Right? I ate Cheerios for breakfast.
Nothing, there's anything wrong with that. It's not how people do it, but
yeah,
like it was literally like, you know, 8:30, you know, excited, happy, you know, like just like checking in with my emotions,
right.
You know, like 9:15, sick to my stomach, like overwhelmed, you know, like drowning, you know, like this really, it was just all over the map. This kind of like sporadic and erratic emotional maelstrom that I was in. That was the word I kept on using throughout those days that I was kind of like tracking or recording kind of my emotional state.
Raw feelings.
Yeah. And I was, it was very helpful.
Yeah.
Because when, at least for me in that situation, I couldn't assess appropriately how I felt about life, about anything.
Right.
And so by doing that, by taking kind of that step back and journaling, not necessarily coffee shop latte, because literally it was like I was going about my day and everything else, but I had this little notepad in the back of my pocket and I would just fill it out. And then at the end of the day, I sat down with my wife and kind of, you know, was able to talk to her
just
about
went
it and
through
everything.
It, yeah. But you're recording it almost stream of conscious, like
yeah.
This is what I'm feeling.
Yeah. Well, and it's almost because it was like when a feeling, be it positive, negative, or neutral, was strong. Then it, like I took note, I marked the time and I kind of checked in with myself to figure out, you know, like this, I'm not judging how I feel right now.
Yes.
I'm not like trying to make myself feel bad or even like force this feeling to stay if it's a feeling I want.
Right.
I'm just taking note of what it is and checking in with it. It was very, very helpful.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's a good process.
That's why I remember during the same season I'm discussing in my life 10 years ago, kind of becoming acquainted with this concept of integrity. Like I would have these really, really powerful feelings throughout life. And those feelings would plunge me in different directions, whether it be to something to medicate it away. You know, if it's a painful feeling, it's like, well, I don't need to feel that. So let me distract myself in some way, or medicate myself in some way, or come up with some contrivance to create a feeling that would overwhelm that feeling or something. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right. How do I combat it, put it down, spray
and,
something?
And it was the first time in my life I think I really learned to just experience negative feelings and be okay with that.
Yeah, man. Yes.
Like,
Don't be afraid of the negative feelings.
No one ever told me it was just okay to to be sad or to weep or to feel or to even feel like rejected.
Right.
Like that you can feel that and that's okay. Like to feel or feel alone, you know, it's like you feel these negative feelings and like instead of trying to shove them away, like feel them, you know, I think it's the first time in my life 10 years ago when I actually felt some of those feelings and just grieved them. And it was good.
Yeah.
It was good. It's really, really
crying is cathartic, you know, like feeling, allowing yourself to feel that sadness and not like, like, oh man, tears, gotta fight them down, you know, all that kind of stuff.
You know, I hear that old song, like it was on Dirty Dancing or something, Big Girls Don't Cry.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, but they do and they can, or at least, you know,
yeah,
like they can.
These two big girls cry all
these
the time.
Two, man, this big girl cries a lot. So it's like, the key in my mind is not to like necessarily let your emotions rule you. There's a time where you have to put that away to go do your job, you know, or be a dad or be a friend or whatever, you know, go to work or whatever it is. But like at the end of the day, the idea is not to run from those feelings.
Right.
Though. The idea is not to, it's to really to experience them, you know?
You know, so literally before we got here, the night that we got here in LA, I got a text message from my father-in-law.
Yeah.
My wife's grandfather passed away.
Mm-hmm.
We'd been expecting it. He'd suffered some strokes over Christmas. And, you know, it was late at night. I knew she'd be asleep the next morning.
Yeah.
I tried to do the math on the time zones.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, surely by this point she's awake and she's seen it. I call her and she's, you know, you can tell when you've called somebody and woken them up and everything. So she's clearly still in bed.
Yeah.
And I was like, have you seen the message? And she had not. And I told her, I mean, she said that she was glad that she heard it from me as opposed to reading it on a text message when she first woke up.
Yeah.
But it took me back to when my granddad died. Not the one that both of my grandfathers have passed, but my first grandfather that died was my dad's dad.
Yeah.
My name, you know, I'm, you know, the one that I share his name.
Right.
And I was working at a cell phone company in Memphis and I was assisting a customer at the time. I managed that store, but a lot of times I would go on the sales floor and, you know, help out and do all that kind of good stuff. And so I was with a customer and I got a call from my dad. And, you know, it rang, had to go through because I was, you know, with the customer. I think I got another call from him. And, you know, typically if, you know, your parents call multiple times, it means something.
Right.
You know, as opposed to just to like a check-in.
Right.
So I asked him if I could just step away real quick. And I went to the office, answered the phone call. My dad told me that Fafa, which is what we called him, had passed away. And I told him, you know, that I loved him. I asked him how he's doing. And, you know, I appreciate him calling and telling me. Hung up the phone. I went back, I finished up with the customer.
Yeah.
I told him, sorry, you know, I just got some bad news and everything, but I don't even know if I told him that, but I just apologized for stepping off the floor for a second.
Yeah.
Finished up with the customer, but then I went back to my office and I just cried.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, because I wanted to make sure, you know, it's this tension of you have a responsibility to do what you're doing at the moment. Right. Mm-hmm. So you're not like putting down your emotions or anything like that, but you do have to kind of control them in that moment.
Or at least set them aside temporarily in order to accomplish something.
But make sure that you don't you still got to pick them back up.
Yeah.
You know,
and let them do what they got to do.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
It's interesting. So, you know, that concept of integrity, letting those emotions do what they need to do. Yeah, it's important. So wrapping up here, He goes on to say, have your outer life represent your inner life. In some ways, the psychological heavy lifting at this point is done. Now it's about translation and application. How do I have my inner life reflect me? Well, number one, make clear decisions. Think of your inner life as the foundation on which you build your outer life. Build is the operative word because it's about being intentional. Through the filter of your values, your sense of purpose, and your desires, you want to make clear decisions. That does not mean the decisions are easy. Do you take a less stressful job so you have more time to spend with your kids, for example? Or do you take a more stressful job that pays more and allows you to provide for more opportunities for your kids, like a college education? It's a tough decision.
It is, yeah.
Again, you sort through your priorities and vision. Take your time. What you don't want to do is drift, not be intentional, or let your life and circumstance carry you along. Integrity requires that you avoid automatically falling into the easy or popular path.
Amen. Goodness, yes.
Number two, stay committed to what you believe. This is about being aware and diligent, about checking in with yourself and asking, am I living my life? Am I proud of my life as far as measured by my goals and my expectations? This is about having, quote, the courage of your convictions that people often talk about, the willingness to step up and speak. Though difficult at first, this process gets easier with practice, and as you find that, what you feared would happen rarely does. Number three, stay open to change. Keep your ear close to the inner voices, and when your inner life changes, as it probably will, take the time to sort and sift and see what to keep and what to let go. But then integrate, be bold, and bring this redefined version of you into your daily life. Acknowledging and adapting to change is what keeps your inner and outer lives in alignment. I want to say that again. Acknowledging and adapting to change is what keeps your inner and your outer lives in alignment. Creating integrity is not a forced march through life. It's not about being better, trying harder, following yet another should. It's about self-honesty and having the courage to hear and accept what your heart and life tell you so that you can more fully become who you already are. It's about connecting you to you.
So can we take these real quick? And I mean, you know, just by each point, because they're different.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait,
stop.
You're not doing the thing you do. We got to stop and talk.
We got to chat.
Make clear decisions. Okay. This, I mean, like, I'm an amen corner. Well, on all of these things, I'm an amen corner on. But, like, this one, like,
yeah.
So, like, one of my biggest frustrations is people who are content, or not even, like they seem content with discontentment, or more accurately, just, like, I mean, I want to say it without sounding like Dave Ramsey, but, like, it's, you're letting life happen to you as opposed to you happening to life. You know what I mean? And kind of getting overwhelmed with that. And I get that things happen and you do get overwhelmed. That does happen in life. But when it seems like everything is constantly the case, it's like, no, like, we can do something. You can do something. We can take action. We can actually make something happen, as opposed to just complain. There's nothing wrong with complaining about it if there's something that's wrong and broken, but let's do something about it. Like, that's a big thing for me, man.
I used to be afflicted with what I have come to define as hyper-Calvinism.
TR, yeah.
And you know, I think of, and again, this is coming from someone who, you know, considers myself to be a Calvinist.
Well, most
right?
people who hate Calvinism the most were afflicted by hyper-Calvinism at one point.
Yeah, or hyper-Calvinists, that, yeah. Or hyper-Calvinists.
Right,
but,
exactly.
But, you know, I used to, that concept, though, of believing so much that God is in control, but it almost becomes like a evil thing. Like, that means, like, okay, if God's in control and all these bad things are happening to me, and somehow God delights in that.
Sure, right.
Then that, like, and that's not how it works.
Spider spindling above the cosmic flames.
That's
for
not
the delight of its tormentor. Or something
that's
like
us
that,
projecting, yeah. Like, right. Imperfect pictures of fallen earthly dads onto our heavenly Father. You know,
I mean, like that's, which is a universal thing.
It is,
or I mean, it's not even just a paternal thing. Just like our parents' failures is how the parents in general is how we have the lens of who
and so we perceive we God to be. We carry that onto the Lord,
absolutely,
right? So,
yeah.
And that's not fair to him. Like God is, that's not how he fathers us. Mm. Like as someone that believes in some mysterious way, the Lord has, you know, predestined our salvation and numbered our days and all these things, we have to hold in tension the fact that, like, he's given us the opportunity to act. And what do we do with that?
Yeah.
Are you going to act or are you going to be, and I'm speaking of self, am I going to act or am I going to be a victim? And the word victim for me encapsulates what I was hearing you say,
right,
is that are you just going to let life happen, or
which
are,
is a Dave Ramseyism? I'm sorry, I didn't want to do that.
But yeah, I don't know anything about Dave Ramsey. I balance my checkbook occasionally, but like, are you going to be a victim,
right?
Or are you going to be proactive? You know, but if you're going to be proactive, you got to determine what defines your values,
right?
Right.
So growing up in a Reformed context, I never did personally suffer from TR, but I have had friends who have suffered from TR. Tragically Reformed.
I'm not just the president; I'm also the client.
Right? Yeah. But you know, my mindset, my philosophy, or whatever around Calvinism has always been kind of a, you know, rest in the assurance that God is in control and act as if it's all up to you. You know what I mean? Kind of this combination of the two.
That's the thing. It doesn't have anything to do with, like, you know, your every time in Scripture that we're reminded of the Lord's sovereignty, it's always in a way that is encouraging us in how secure we are.
Right.
It's not talking about how, you know,
how screwed you are,
and how you want to, right, you know, I mean, it's just not. The Lord is the outside of the door says all are welcome. You know,
there's a theologian that talked about kind of this divide in Christendom about kind of the way in which you see God, or really just, I can't remember the quote, but basically it's the way in which you see your religion as either the source of, you know, freedom,
right,
that I would say we experience through Christ, or the source of like shame. And like, you know, yes, like all of these things that you need to do, or you're doing this wrong. And like this, like,
right,
this kind of sense of oppression, or this kind of mindset, right, of scarcity versus abundance, that sort of thing.
Mm.
I'm butchering everything because I was not prepared for where this ended up.
Frankly, but, I wasn't either. But
yeah.
But anyway, so
that's one. That was
point one.
Point two: stay committed to what you believe. So this is kind of getting to what we're saying. And actually, let's talk about two and three together, because those really kind of do, you know, I think, live together, which,
yeah,
is staying committed to what you, yeah, believe, but also staying open to change. And I think that that's something, especially for me in the last 2 years in particular, has been really trying to like refine down, you know, Christian, what do you believe? I just heard Lincoln Duncan in my head.
Right. Yeah. No,
you know,
right,
but like literally like not what were you told to believe, not what you brought up to believe, not what you know is culturally accepted around you.
What do you believe?
Do you believe? Because that's what's critical, because it is living without, and you can call yourself, for, you know, so we're already in kind of the Christian wheel space, and our apologies to our non-Christian listeners.
Yeah. And we didn't even really intend to go
just
there,
speaking out of personal cultural context. But yeah, like you can be in, you know, you can call yourself Christian or call yourself whatever your, you know, religious identity may be. But if you're living that out to appease that cultural context, as opposed to being true to what you actually believe,
you're
living without
integrity.
Exactly.
That does not have integrity.
Exactly. I would argue that's not even really a faith, but that's
correct.
Claiming something without integrity. That's living a life without integrity.
That is correct.
And so defining what it is you believe and being true to that
and living authentically to that,
which can be a scary prospect,
terrifying,
but so vital. I think that's so vital, while also, and I think this is important, staying open to change. Those two things, living in tension, mm-hmm, of like, you know, what do you believe, being true to that, but at the same time,
mm-hmm,
if you get, like, when you're a kid, you believe in Santa Claus,
right?
You know what I mean? But then you get older and you find out new information. Reindeer can't fly. Uh-oh. You know what I mean? Or something like that. Or, you know, like, you know, maybe that's a bad example, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like being open to change and being challenged. In the future, in a couple of weeks here, I think in about 3 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to have an episode about the Inklings. I'm really looking forward to this particular one.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be talking about some of, you know, our most celebrated thinkers and writers and lecturers and, you know, theologians and all these different folks who all come from these various diverse perspectives with their core belief system. Mm-hmm. And I think somebody like, you know, as an Anglican, you'll appreciate this. Somebody like Lewis,
right,
who was an agnostic, mm-hmm, who converted to Christianity, mm-hmm, through many of his friends that were Inklings, right? Mm-hmm. Did so not changing his beliefs, but because he was persuaded towards truth,
right,
because of his beliefs,
and then followed suit.
Yeah,
right.
We'll talk about this more. I really don't want to. I mean, we're at the end of this episode and everything, and it's coming up in a future one.
Yeah.
But suffice to say, Tolkien presented Christianity as the true myth to Lewis.
Right.
And in that language, he's speaking to the truth of who Lewis was, what was true that Lewis believed.
Right.
And was persuaded in that way. I just think it's, you see these kind of two things living in Lewis in that moment.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll get
into
it. And
he was open maybe to that shift.
Oh yeah. And that's the thing. All those dudes were open to like learning from each other and disagreeing with each other.
And then made sure to be authentic to
that. Nobody was, exactly. Oh man, I'm so looking forward to that episode. It's crazy.
But you know, that's the key for, I feel like all of us. And I really do, again, that's, I remember really wrestling with this concept of integrity. And I remember that's when I started growing my hair out.
Is that right?
And
that tracks, doesn't it? Yeah.
And I had a guy at church. He's older than me, kind of a mentor figure, not quite as old as my parents, but still dear friends with him to this day. And he came up to me and he said, you know, you've been going through a lot recently, and I've noticed like you know, you're growing your hair out and stuff. And he was like, I wonder if you're trying to be someone you're not. And I was like, you know, I think I'm giving myself permission to be someone that I've always wanted to be.
Exactly.
And it was so liberating.
To say that.
Yeah. And he was like, huh, that's cool.
It's so interesting because that interaction right there, I think, is so true, especially this, you know, again, our cultural context in the South, especially in the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that exact mindset of when people start living authentically.
Authentically.
It's challenged by, like, you're trying to be someone you're not. It's like, no, you forced me to be somebody I'm not.
Right.
I'm starting to actually be myself.
But the mark of the good friend
is to embrace and accept that.
That guy was for me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that you have been for me.
Oh, man.
But that's the key. That concept of integrity, of living with consistency between your internal world and your external world, and at least giving those few closest people to you the opportunity to love you or reject you.
Right, but
for
to
who
know
you really are.
Yes. Yes, John David. Yes.
For who you really are.
That's so good.
That's so good, man.
And in 2013... that's why I got the word integrity tattooed on my
Yo, he just busted out his arm. He's on his arm. Of course, John David has tattoos on either arm, but he just busted out his left arm tattoo that says integrity. And then it's got, no, I'm just kidding. It says integrity. It's got integrity. It's got these vines growing above it.
Yeah.
And then I can't read what's above that.
So it has the word integritas in Latin, which this author referenced in the article that we're discussing.
Right.
He talks about it being that concept of consistency, whole or complete. And then above it is a vine, which is derivative from John 15:5. I am the vine. The Lord says, I am the vine. You are the branches. You know, anything that dwells in me and I am you will, you know, bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. You know, it's just I'm a part of something greater. And then the little Roman numerals right above the vine are the Roman numerals 2013.
There you go. Wow.
2013. And I actually drew that tattoo myself.
Did you really?
I drew that tattoo myself. That was this kind of my Ebenezer. It's kind of my monument to the things that happened that year.
Wow.
And how important and transformative they were for me. And just so happened to be the year that Country Squire Radio was founded.
How about that?
Isn't that something?
How about that? You know, it's amazing to see. I just want to say that I'm honored to be part of, to have met you when I did.
Yeah.
I do remember very specifically hearing about all the epic parties that I never got to attend. I was like, are you going to do one of those parties this year? Like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm like, that's cool.
We had a house. Let's see, that first Halloween party, we painted the dog
green.
No, that was St. Patty's Day.
That was St. Patrick's Day.
We painted the dog green, and then everyone stumbled downtown, and we sold Jello shots, and then woke up the next morning.
Yeah,
it was
before my time.
It was very impressive.
I remember the St. Patrick's Day that I was there. I went by your house, and I think the dog was green still. That did still happen. I think you did that the next year. But it was like you and Damon and one or two other folks just kind of sitting on the lawn drinking beer, and like, yeah, we're just doing a little lower key this time around.
I mean, that first year, I want to say there were like 65-year-old people I didn't even know playing beer pong in our front yard, puking in the bushes.
Oh, good Lord. You were trying to bring, like, I've never been pro fraternity culture at all, but you were trying to bring that into
the Phi Delta house at Mississippi State to Bellhaven. Yeah,
hey man, you went from trashy to classy, and if you want to go from trashy to classy, you need to be getting yourself a grid quality corncob pipe from our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
Man, that is exactly right.
That's right, man.
And the perfect springboard from trashy to classy is the country gentleman.
Yes, sir.
The country gentleman, of course, represents sophistication. From someone that's in a pastoral setting, this country gentleman, like at the country squire. You know, this might be a small town, but you have the opportunity to stand out as your country gentleman smoking a country gentleman. How's that?
That sounds great. I think that sounds wonderful. Here's the wonderful thing about the good folks at Missouri Meerschaum. They are filled with integrity. They make some great quality products that you know can enjoy. The products have integrity, which means they're going to stand up, which we learned about earlier
in this episode. Right?
Yes.
Like the bridge. Yep.
And of course, the good folks behind the scene are operating on the utmost integrity. They're also coming out with some great new designs constantly. You can always go to corncobpipe.com, find yourself a large selection of corncob pipes available to you. So if you've not done so already, be sure to pick yourself up a Missouri Meerschaum pipe this week. Take yourself a picture, a selfie, a TikTok or a FaceTime or whatever you do. Put it on the social medias.
Friend face.
It's a great way to let the good folks at Missouri Meerschaum know we appreciate them for sponsoring this show.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Pipe question of the week.
Pipe question of the week, man. Coming in from Jared Frossier.
Yeah, I was excited about this question. Yeah.
Okay, here's what Jared had to say. So I have been smoking my first tin of Autumn Evening, and when enjoying about halfway through the tin, I started getting a very sour note that burns the back of my throat. I thought it might be the pipe, but it tastes fine with other aromatic tobaccos. I also smoked it in a different pipe first. For the first half of the bowl was good, but the second half turned sour again. Why might this happen? And this is again from Jared.
Yeah, I hear these questions constantly, and I want to reaffirm, Jared, that like nothing's fundamentally wrong with your palate or even your pipes, anything like that. I constantly hear people complain. They're like, man, that tobacco just hit me the wrong way. Or, man, this tobacco that everyone says is like really, really harsh and like all that, man, this is really smooth to me. And like, this is what I smoke for my, you know, nighttime going to lull me to sleep kind of smoke type thing. You know, it's so interesting to me, but this happens all the time. And I want to encourage Jared that different tobaccos, they hit different people in ways that I think is mostly due to a physiological response. So now again, I was a history major. I'm a washed up seminarian. I own a smoke shop. I didn't even stay in a Holiday Inn Express last night. I'm certainly not a biologist. But I have come in contact with people so much over the, 12 years I've been doing this, that I am convinced that people have different physiological responses to different tobaccos. I'm telling you, I have had someone smoke unflavored Black Cavendish, which is literally the mildest thing that I can give you in my shop, and it has burned their throat.
Interesting.
And they'll turn around and smoke a bright leaf yellow Virginia that's been flue cured, and they'll be like, man, that is the mildest tobacco. Nice, that's my, yeah, exact. And I'm right. Like, what earth, what planet are you living on? Yeah. Like what? And I'm telling you, like, it, you know, so much, the more you learn about tobacco and how it interacts with your body, premium tobacco, you know, you start to read about this stuff and how it interacts with not just your brain, but your pH and all these things. Like, everyone has a different response to different tobaccos. We have some common threads. You know, there are most people will look at a unflavored Black Cavendish and be like, man, that tastes mild as air, you know. Mm. But there's people that, you know, like poor Jared, who is sitting here trying to struggle with Autumn Evening, also known as a very mild tobacco, and he's having trouble with the back of his throat, and then it's tasting sour. And I just want to encourage you, Jared, like, it might not be the tobacco for you, and that's okay. There are some tobaccos that, for whatever reason, they react differently to your palate.
It's kind of like some people say that cilantro tastes like soap.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the exact same thing. They have that reaction that's like, it's just physiological, and you can't really explain it unless you took a geneticist or something to get after that. And it's like, man, I got enough bills already, you know? But I have several people that smoke Autumn Evening because it is the mildest, most sweet tobacco that they know. So it's very approachable, particularly for new pipe smokers. Others avoid aromatics like this, like the plague, because they think they're the harshest tobaccos that burn the hottest. And that this is the thing, like, and then of course there's that sour note you're talking about. It's the same reason, like, and I'm one of the few people that have ever said this, but like, I cannot stand luxury Bullseye Flake from Peter Stokeby. I love luxury Navy Flake, luxury Twist Flake. I could take or leave, but luxury Bullseye Flake, it tastes like soap to me. It tastes like someone emptied out, like melted a chapstick tube and like put it inside a pipe tobacco. Like, I just can't get around it.
Hmm.
I've met maybe one other person that gets that essence from luxury Bullseye Flake. And it's just something about how that tobacco, the varietals, how they're processed, and then how my body interacts with it. And so I just know, like, I don't smoke luxury Bullseye Flake. And I hope it gives you some confidence in that, like, nothing's wrong with you. You just don't really mix with that tobacco too well. And that's okay.
That's okay.
Give it to a friend.
Yeah. Man. Well, great question there, Jared. Thanks so much for sending that in.
Smoke with integrity and give that to a friend.
Great pipe.
Don't force yourself to smoke it because you don't like it.
There you go. Yeah. Smoke with integrity. Now that should have been a catchphrase a long time ago.
Oh, I should put that on a t-shirt. Smoke with integrity.
Good. There you go.
Quick Fire with the Squire.
Quick Fire Questions. All right, so I tried.
You did it, man. I think
I've been saving this episode to get there.
You did great.
All right, man. Coming in from Pastor Joda. Money is no object edition. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. He's giving us a blank check. We got the old Bruce Wayne card. We're gonna be great. Here we go. Pipe tobacco.
Money is no object.
Money's no object.
I mean, gosh. Rainer 71.
Okay.
Virginia Flake. It's got some white burley in there, I think, and maybe some dark fired. It's like $50. It's fabulous.
Money's no object. I want
every ounce
unopened tin of Frog Morton cellar. I want Russ Hicks cellar completely cleaned out.
Yeah.
I want it all. And if money's no object, I will pay any price for it.
Yeah.
And I want a Scrooge McDuck, a whole pile of unopened, don't get me wrong, because I still want to smoke it, but I don't want to like bathe in it. You know what I'm saying? like an open pile of tins that somehow I'm able to do, but anybody else dives into Scrooge McDuck's vault, they're going to like, you know,
smash their face. Right.
No, I want to Scrooge McDuck that whole mother. I want to. That's what I want.
That's great.
Yeah. All right. So that's, next one is pipe. Money's no object.
Money is no object.
Yep.
A Jay Allen pipe.
Oh, okay.
A Jay Allen pipe. He does such a great job, and I need to sell some more pipes and cigars myself before I can afford one of his pipes. It's a Jay Allen pipe.
There you go. When we were in Vegas, I referenced a pipe that was Breyer, and it was like an iguana claw.
That was amazing.
Holding a bowl. I've never seen anything with that level of like detail to texture.
Yeah.
It's dangerous. Like it was sharp, but it was...
And it was a couple $1,000, I think.
Yeah.
And that pipe is actually kind of famous or infamous in the pipe community.
Right.
Because it's been... I want to say it's been like... What's the story behind that pipe? It's either been bought and sold but no one's ever smoked it.
Right.
Like, and it's kind of gone around to pipe shows for like years and years now. No one's ever like had the courage to like be the guy that pulls the trigger to buy it, even though it's extraordinary.
It's one of, I mean, like that's the thing that's, you think about like famous art pieces that kind of go around. It's kind of like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want it. Well, I'll be the one.
I want to say, and Jay, correct me forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think Jay, with Pipe and Tamper, I think he bought that pipe. I think he finally...
In Vegas?
I think he finally was the one that bought that pipe. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I got to go look.
Well,
someone that I know bought that pipe finally and is enjoying it.
Well, there you go.
And I'm happy for that. Because that pipe is really something.
That'd be my money as no object. Our vehicle?
A BMW 7 Series.
Okay. For me, I already got my baby. I already got my Mini Coupe. I've always wanted a Mini Coupe and recently got it.
It fits you so perfect.
Love that car so much. Love driving it. It is just so much fun to drive. I will say, though, money's no option. I would love I think it was like the Series 2 Volkswagen bus, like the old school.
Old school.
Yeah. The problem is it makes no practical sense whatsoever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, you had a bunch of kids or something.
Well, but even still, like just the mile, it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
Like, cause you want to, like, that's a collectible. You'd like keep that thing polished.
Yeah.
But then it's sit in the garage. So like, yeah. So but if money's no option, all right, well, yeah, I'll get that.
Yeah.
All right. Finally, vacation. Money's no option.
Okay. I want to go in my lifetime to the top part of Norway.
Oh.
Where it's real close to the Arctic Circle.
Okay.
And they have, and you can Google this, it's all over the web, they have these igloos that you can sleep in.
I've seen this.
They have igloos that you can sleep in that have they're clear igloos.
Yeah.
And your bed is inside this igloo, and you are looking up at the stars and the Aurora Borealis.
Mm.
And I want to do that.
Wow.
I want to do that. There's some in Norway.
Yeah.
I think there might be one in Finland and like maybe Iceland, but they're all right there, like these Scandinavian countries real close to the Arctic Circle.
Yeah.
I want to sleep in a doggone igloo.
There was something a while back when like my wife and I were looking for like, you know, it's kind of a fun getaway type thing. It was a hotel that was built into the side of a mountain.
Yeah.
And the rooms had like opened up into the open view of the mountain, like with the waterfall going down and everything like that. And I was like, I felt very it was insanely expensive. It's like, no, this is never going to happen. But it looked amazing and just would be just incredible. Although admittedly, even as I'm speaking on it now, I did remember thinking at the time, I wonder what the mosquito situation is.
Good point.
Is that you grew up in Mississippi
when you're constantly considering mosquitoes.
What's the mosquito situation? So yeah, there you go. That's from Pastor Joda, the Money Is No Option edition. Thank you so much for that, Joda. We appreciate you, brother. You know, I think this was a good one, man. The From the Library series, as we mentioned at the top of the show, it's an opportunity to really just kind of have some fun conversations over a bowl of tobacco, and we hope that you've been able to enjoy that with us.
Yeah.
And this, you know, coming up, you know, we've got some great episodes over the next couple of weeks, but we're definitely in that headspace of, you know, the home, what do you call it? The home lap, the
home stretch.
What do you call it? Victory lap. There's kind of a victory lap mindset, I think, with these episodes and in our minds. But even still, like, They're running a little bit longer because I think it's a little bit harder to end the show in each episode.
It is. Yeah, I feel the weight of it. But yeah. It's been fun.
It's been fun. Absolutely. Well, hey, man, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.